You're listening to From Heaven and Hope, a weekly podcast where Nicole Frazier brings you conversations from those who have been affected by grief. Whether a parent, child, friend, counselor, pastor, or philanthropist, everyone moves through and conquers grief in their own way. We know that what you're facing is a long road, but no matter how dark that road is, there will always be light. There will always be purpose. From where they are in heaven to the hope you need to move forward, we want to help you on that journey. Here is today's episode.
Hey everyone. I've received a lot of feedback and requests for content and stories surrounding pregnancy and infant loss. The statistic is 1 in 4 women will or have experienced pregnancy and infant loss, and today's guest is one of those 1 in 4. Today we're chatting with Monica Schneider, who is sadly lost her baby boy on Christmas Day and somehow has found meaning and purpose. So let's hear what she has to say.
Hey, Monica, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. So we were actually introduced by Rachel Terza, who recorded an episode here with me a few weeks ago. But why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and why you're here today?
So Rachel, I got to know through a mutual friend that we know. Unfortunately, in December of 2016, I experienced a stillborn loss with my son at 29 weeks gestation. And it happened on December 25th, 2016, so on Christmas Day. And it was completely unexpected. I'd had a healthy pregnancy. You know, there were no complications. Christmas Day, I just started to experience signs of labor. And when I called the hospital, we happened to be in Cambridge. We're from the Hamilton area, and we were in Cambridge visiting with family for Christmas. And they said to go to our nearest hospital. And I remember saying to my husband on the way, you know, it's early, you know, maybe they can stop the contractions. But if they can't stop the contractions far enough along, baby will be okay. Babies are born at this age, and everything, you know, they can help us out. And we have a daughter who's really involved with Sick Kids Hospital in Toronto. So I said, you know, we trust Sick Kids. We'll ask for the baby to go to Sick Kids. So at that point, you know, we didn't know what had actually happened. But anyway, I got to the hospital. They confirmed that I was actually in labor, but that the baby had no heartbeat. And from the time that they confirmed that, it was really only about half an hour, maybe 40 minutes before I was holding him in my arms. So it all happened very, very quickly. And when we chose to share it on with our family and friends and shared it on social media of what had happened, a friend of mine contacted me and said, hey, I know somebody else who very recently had a loss. And so that's how I got connected to Rachel.
Yeah, that's crazy. Did they tell you, just out of curiosity, if you're comfortable sharing what happened with Zachary?
So his name, our son's name is Zachary. And so we ended up choosing to have an autopsy, which was in itself a really difficult decision. You know, at the time of his delivery, there was nothing that they could see at that moment. You know, there was no issues with his cord. You know, he looked well, he presented well. You know, there's a whole sort of protocol in place for all these exams that happen with the mom, that happen with the baby. And we chose to have an autopsy completed simply because, you know, if we could get any information from it that would, you know, inform us in subsequent pregnancies, then that would be helpful. So the autopsy did come back and tell us that there was a problem with the placenta. So basically, we found out that my body, and like the placenta is supposed to be invisible to the mom's body. It's this miraculous organ that just grows in pregnancy and is essential and needed for the baby. But the mom's body is not supposed to know that it's there. But my body recognized the placenta and saw it as an intruder. It was basically attacking the placenta. And Zachary grew to 29 weeks and was able to be nourished and everything up until that point. point, but then eventually there was not enough of the placenta that was working to keep him nourished. So that's why we lost him.
Wow. Okay. So, and then right, you mentioned Rachel, like getting connected with her sort of shortly after Zachary's birth. How did you find it helpful to sort of lean on someone like Rachel or lean on each other? Like, would you suggest that to somebody that might be dealing with something similar, like find somebody who can empathize or
yes
or not?
Oh my goodness. Rachel and I became fast friends. We became really, really close very quickly. I think the fact that our boys, she lost twin boys. So the fact that we had boys that we both lost, that they happened at right around the same time. So we were sort of going through the processes of our grief and sort of thinking about and processing everything in sort of the same stages. I don't like using the term stages for grief because I don't think it's necessarily linear, but we definitely were having a lot of the same thoughts at the same time. And so we first connected through text, and it was one of those, you know, hi, I know you don't know me, but I got your name. But that night, I think we texted for a few hours back and forth of, you know, oh, tell me about your son and tell me, you know, and she told me about her sons, and we shared some really intimate details that we want to share with people, but that people just don't tend to ask. And with her and I, it was, you know, everything's on the table. All the cards are on the table. You could say whatever you wanted, and there was no judgment. There was no hesitation. So it was a great, great relationship to form.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I can definitely empathize with that feeling. That it's just, you wouldn't wish it on anybody, but it's comforting to know you're not alone.
Absolutely.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Apart from sort of connecting with somebody that can truly empathize with what you're feeling, was there anything that anybody did, gave to you, said to you that you found particularly helpful in those kind of early stages? And then on the flip side, was there anything that just was not helpful at all that you could just turn away?
Yeah, certainly some of both. For me, lost a baby, my hands and my arms were so empty. And it's this real physical void that you're missing, you know, and your body, when you give birth to a stillborn or you lose your baby, your body doesn't know that. So, you know, I was still making milk, and that was a hard thing. And I needed something to hold. And so a few things that I got from people, I got some jewelry. Early on, a friend had a necklace made for me, and that I loved that. I loved that I could wear it. I could touch it. Again, it was something that I could hold. We had a blanket that Zachary was wrapped in at the hospital, and we kept that blanket. So having things that I could carry around were really meaningful to me. And with respect to, you know, things, other things that people did, of course, you know, there was lots of support of, you know, meals and, you know, flowers and messages of support and people thinking of us, which was really great. You know, there were some comments very early on. I think it was probably the day after, maybe 2 days after, that somebody said, you know, you can try again. That was, you know, that was hurtful. I get that they were coming from a good place and trying to be encouraging, but at that moment in that time, all that mattered was that he wasn't with us. It didn't matter that we could try again. So I would suggest, you know, if someone's trying to support someone through this, really kind of try and consider where they're at and not necessarily, you know, project long-term future goals for them, because those can be really challenging. I would say that was probably one of the hardest things. Quite early on too, I got into a bit of a heated situation with my parents, where they were using the term angel and referring to our daughter was 3.5 years old at the time, and they were referring to her as an angel. And I was really struggling with the semantics of that, because she's not an angel, you know, Zachary's our angel. She's here. And, you know, that was difficult. And, you know, emotions are running high. And, you know, I think too, for me, I had to try and remember most of the things people say and do come from a good place. And fortunately for them, they've not been through this. And so it's hard for someone to really imagine when they haven't gone through it themselves.
Yeah. So with that in mind, what do you think is the hardest thing to sort of communicate and articulate to people, to friends and family that are trying to be supportive, that just want to help you, but ultimately just don't understand? What do you think would be the hardest thing that you had to kind of try and explain to them?
I think maybe just the importance of being able to acknowledge not only the loss, but the existence of our babies. And, you know, not a lot of people know why. And that's because people haven't asked, right? So, you know, I appreciate you asking why, because not a lot of people know. They just, and I don't know if it's a fear or, you know, not wanting to dwell into the conversation, but that matters to us, right? It matters what happened, and it's a part of his story. And, you know, and same with his birth. His birth is a part of his story. And, you know, so, and even what he looked like, you know, I remember telling somebody that he had Zoe's nose, our daughter's nose. And it's like, those little things matter. So I think not just sort of surrounding people and comforting them in the loss, but also letting them talk to you about the existence of their baby.
Yeah, that's been a pretty fluid comment, I think, to everybody that I've talked to, is that friends worry that they're going to upset you by bringing them up, but they're always going to be there. So it's better if you acknowledge that they existed and that they still exist within your kind of story and family.
So exactly. And I think, you know, one thing that I've read and I've heard people say is, by bringing them up, you're not reminding me that they're not here.
Yeah.
We always know that, you know, so it's not, you're not reminding me. It's not like I forgot. And it's like, oh yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it'll be there forever. Yeah. So just don't be afraid to bring it up gently and with love. So again, with friends, I'm sure there was a lot of people around you that were expecting or announcing healthy births then, and probably even now. How do you think you manage the sort of complexity of emotions there, being happy for them, but just sad for yourself?
It's, yeah, there's a balance for sure. I mean, I always think babies are to be celebrated. You know, babies are blessings. And so for me personally, I'm always very happy when someone has announced their baby coming. I struggle with some of the sort of misconceptions of pregnancy and healthy babies. So the idea of, you know, oh, you know, we waited to tell people so that we were, you know, in the safe zone. My struggle with that is, well, you're not. I'm sorry.
You're not even when they're here, right? Like, there's no guarantees ever.
That's right. And things can happen unexpectedly. So there really is no safe time in pregnancy. So I think that that's a struggle. And then you don't want to be that sort of bursts the bubble person all the time either. So sometimes you say something, but sometimes you just kind of, you know, keep your mouth shut. But, you know, I've always been very happy for people. I've treaded cautiously. I have to say, I'm more reluctant to buy baby items for an expecting parent. I'm definitely hesitant in doing that. Because I think about the struggle that we had in sort of getting rid of some of those items that we had purchased. And, you know, so I don't want anybody that I know to have to go through that. But as a whole, it's, again, babies are great. They're blessings. And, you know, I wish for everyone happy, healthy pregnancies. And so I just try and take it in stride. You know, there are certainly struggles going with that. And I mean, even with our own, we have had our rainbow baby, and that was difficult to share. It was difficult to see how excited people were when, you know, we were excited too, but also very nervous, very scared. So, you know, the fears sort of outweigh the excitement in those subsequent pregnancies, at least for myself and my husband, it did. So, yeah, so it's a balance. It's a struggle. But again, babies are blessings, and they deserve to be celebrated.
For sure. So speaking of your subsequent pregnancy with your son, how did you manage that anxiety? Because that's a long, you know, 37 to 40, whatever weeks. to be scared.
Yeah, it is. You know, for me, one of the things, because in our investigations after we lost Zachary, there were things that we found out about me and my body and me being pregnant, and I was diagnosed with lupus. And it turned out that one of the medications I had previously been on but stopped when I became pregnant with him was actually a medication as part of the protocol to address the placenta issue. And I couldn't get over that. I couldn't get over the fact that a medication I was taking but then stopped is what could have saved him. So, you know, for me, that was a real sort of driving force behind, you know, we are medically supported in trying again. And, you know, we got everything, our checks and balances in place. And I had certain medical things that had to happen before conceiving again. And we went through that and jumped those hoops. And when we felt that, you know, I was in a safe place and that my body was, you know, able to nourish another baby, then we gave it a try. We did say that it was our one kick at the can, and that if for whatever reason something didn't go well in that pregnancy, that we wouldn't go through that heartbreak again. But I felt really strongly within me that we needed to give our family the effort to try again.
Yeah.
But there's definitely what sort of the term I've adopted of scanxiety. So, you know, with every single appointment, going into every single scan, you get nervous because you never forget those words of, I'm sorry, there's no heartbeat. You just don't. And so every time, you know, you walk in and you worry that that's what you're going to hear again. You know, we had a very good support team. And I think that was the main thing, was they recognized the stress associated with it. And they wanted to give us the best pregnancy we possibly could have. They were very forthcoming in what the risks were. And we knew the risks were high, but they were also very supportive.
Mm-hmm. And was there anything, because it's really hard when ultrasounds and scans become triggers, like, you know, I can relate to them being very scary and anxiety provoking, but not necessarily a trigger for me personally, but very scary. So I can imagine if it also was a trigger in like hearing the words that you never want to hear. So was there anything that helped you through those scans? Like for me, I know I would just demand that my husband was allowed in right from the beginning, but I know COVID might have changed some things, but what did you do?
Yeah. I mean, thankfully for us, COVID wasn't a factor when we were going through it. I know I've thought about that, and I've thought about the moms that are having to go, you know, on their own and not have support. And I really feel for them. For me, you know, I think there was just a lot of positive talk and, you know, being confident in our medical team, that was a big thing. And trying to enjoy the scans and the days that, you know, we were finding out that everything was great, and sort of take confidence in the different markers and milestones that we were meeting. Our team was very clear that if we could get to a certain week in the pregnancy, then they would have, you know, again, it was all around placenta health. So there's different markers in every sort of week of pregnancy that they look for. And as long as we continue to check those off, I felt like I was doing everything I could to have a healthy pregnancy. And, you know, I also pursued, you know, some naturopath supports. I did massage. I did, you know, I did acupuncture. I did everything. I kind of researched and did everything that I felt I could to give this pregnancy and baby the best outcome.
That's great and great advice. So you said Zachary was born sleeping on Christmas Day. So now how do you kind of make sure that with your kids that you have now, that Christmas Day is special, but also honoring the fact that this day is significant and also heartbreaking for you? How do you manage that in the years that?
Yeah. So Christmas is really special for us. It always has been. My husband and I both love Christmas. We got married in December because we wanted to have a Christmas wedding. So Christmas has always been a big deal for us. And so of course, Christmas 2016, you know, the day started off great because we had Christmas morning, Santa came. I was 8 months pregnant, you know, it was fantastic. And then it ended really tragically. And that night, you know, there was a lot of why Christmas, like, why did it have to be this day? And there was a lot of upset and grief, even just on the loss of Christmas Day. And we actually decided through that night that, no, you know what, we need to continue to celebrate Christmas. And we sort of made that conscious decision. And the first year following, you know, that first year of going through all our grief and everything was a struggle. And we didn't know what we were going to do for Christmas. And so I had the idea of doing a toy drive. And I thought, you know what, we'll collect some gifts, some toys that we would have been getting for Zachary. He would have been a year old, and we'll donate them to some kids in need. And it ended up growing into what has become one of my most favorite Christmas traditions. And, you know, we connected with some local businesses where we are, and we got support that way from the community, and just reaching out and letting people know that this is what we're doing. And we also saw it as an opportunity to bring awareness and sort of break down the stigma of talking about, you know, infant loss and stillborn and miscarriage, and sort of giving people that opportunity to tell us their stories. And so, yeah, so our first year we did a toy drive and collected a whole bunch of toys. And, you know, there was one thing that we were pretty, that I didn't want to go anywhere that first year, Christmas Day. I wanted to stay home. I felt pretty strong about that. I thought, you know, I don't know how I'm going to feel that day. I think, you know, as a family, we just need to honor our emotions. And we went to the cemetery. That was something that we decided that we want to do on Christmas as well, is visit Zachary, take him a cupcake or some, or piece of cake and balloons, and recognize, you know, his birthday. And so that's something that we've maintained. And so, yeah, we just, like I said, we decided early on that Christmas, we deserve to celebrate Christmas, and we deserve to honor Zachary. And it was after the first year, you know, in the week after Christmas, that I thought, you know, what a special little boy that he chose that day, because he knew that we would always be together. I mean, we'll never be working Christmas Day, because, you know, my husband and I don't have jobs where we would have to work on Christmas Day. Kids won't be in school. We'll always have that time together. And I just thought, wow, like, okay, all right, little guy, like, yeah, we can do this for you. And so, you know, that's sort of what it's become, is we have the toy drive in his honor. We love collecting all the toys. It gets people talking about him, which we love. And, you know, our daughter sort of had this idea of all the toys we collect are the toys that Zachary gets in heaven. And so she gets super excited, because she'll see, you know, we've collected, you know, hundreds of toys, and she'll see these toys coming through our house, and she'll say, oh my goodness, Zachary's so lucky, and look at what he got. And, you know, so that's been brought some joy to it as well.
That's awesome. So do you feel that creating an initiative like that, or something to honor the memory of somebody that does good for other people, has that been like a strategic part, an important part of your healing, do you think?
I think so. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, again, I feel like it gives me a good opportunity to talk about him, which is, you know, which I love doing. And because I want people to know about him, I want people to know that, you know, he's in our family. And it sort of opens it up for people to talk to me about him as well. And no, I think it's been really nice. And we've been able to mark a few different sort of milestones. One thing we did is he would have been entering school this past year. So we collected backpacks and school supplies, and we donated those to children in need in his honor. And so I think by doing those things, it just helps to feel there's purpose to what happened.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do you feel like losing Zachary, his birth, and then the loss of him, do you feel like it affected the dynamic of your marriage? Did you grieve differently? And how have you managed that process?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely grieved differently. You know, my husband really retreated, and at the time he was, you know, 100% working from home. So he really retreated into his office, and he worked long, long hours because he could, because all he had to do was go downstairs into the basement. That was something that he needed to do, whereas I wanted to talk. I wanted to talk about what happened. I wanted to go over sort of the what happened through the day and the times, and I wanted to look at the pictures. So in that aspect, we were very different. But something that I've learned through this is there's no one else that I would have been better to go through this with than him. And, you know, we've found that at the times where I'm falling apart and I'm crumbling, he's strong and he's able to support me. And then the times, you know, on the flip side where he's really struggling, you know, I've been the support. And so we've really complemented each other in that way. One of the things too, that early on, I knew that I wanted us to connect with other people, and not only for myself, I wanted him to meet other dads. I wanted him to, you know, to not feel so alone. And I think just by nature, women try and reach out and make those connections, whereas, you know, the husbands, the dads don't really. And so by, you know, saying to him, hey, we're going to go to a bereavement group together, which we did, and we met three other amazing couples who lost their babies, he got to make some connections and he got to talk to the other dads, which I think has been really good for him.
That's great advice. Where did you find your bereavement group? Like, how did you get connected with that?
So I did research, unfortunately, because, you know, like I said, Zachary was delivered in Cambridge and we don't live in Cambridge. You know, the Cambridge hospital couldn't really connect us with anything local. But so I did some research and I found Bereaved Families of Ontario, and I connected with the local chapter, and they have a infant perinatal loss group. And so we got connected with that program, and then we were set up in a group. I believe we started in March or beginning of April, so just a few months after Zachary, and it was us and three other couples. And so we did a 10-week program, and that's, you know, in a roundabout way or twisted way too, something I've always been very interested in, bereavement and bereavement counseling and support. And so then now I've since gone through the facilitator training, and I'm now involved in peer facilitating those groups for other families.
That's great. So do you find catharsis then, or healing too, in just helping other people through it?
Yeah, for sure. And I think too, you know, like I was saying earlier on, I don't feel like grief is a stage thing. I don't think it's linear. I think it's kind of a mess. And, you know, I think if you had to draw, it would be like scribbles all over a page. So there are times where, you know, I'm really struggling and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, like this many years later, I'm still having a hard time. Then, you know, I meet couples who are very early on, you know, we're talking a couple weeks or maybe a couple months. And then I can really see, no, there has been healing over time. You know, yeah, there's still some, there is still grief. There always will be. There's still sadness. There always will be. But you lose that rawness that I think is so prominent in the beginning, where you really, you know, you can't see beyond anything but the loss of your baby. So I find that helps me, and I think that's what's helpful in the groups too, is they are peer led, and so they see us as the facilitators, and they think, okay, 5 years from now or 10 years from now, you know, that's kind of where I might be.
Yeah, but and that's super valuable to understand that your life just will look different in a certain period of time.
Yeah, exactly. I think, and Rachel, I think, was the one who said to me, I think we need to be okay with just being 95% happy for the rest of our lives. And there's truth in that for sure. Will you laugh again? Will you, you know, will you sort of have sort of carefree fun again? And, you know, you will, but there will always be something missing, you know, at miles, like birthdays and anniversaries and Christmas, you know, there is something missing because there's someone missing.
Yeah. And I think too, not being ashamed of any triggers that happen and when they happen, because you never know what they're going to be, and they can happen anywhere at any time. They can happen 2 weeks after or months and years after. So.
That's right. Actually, I actually shocked myself. So our son, Teddy, he was born August of 2019, right around his first birthday, Zachary's loss hit me really hard. And I didn't anticipate that. I didn't anticipate that that would happen because, you know, we're here, we are celebrating Teddy and he's this beautiful baby that we've been blessed with. And, you know, I'm so grateful to have Zoe and to have him. But for some reason, Teddy's first birthday was super hard for me. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't expecting that, right? Like nobody, yeah. there's no recipe for how this is going to go. So,
yeah. So speaking of that, when, like, as your children grow, they reach different milestones, do you find it comforting or bittersweet, or are you sad, or was that kind of a somewhat isolated incident to Teddy's first birthday, or does that periodically happen?
Yeah. I mean, like Teddy's birthday, like I said, it hit me hard. There were some days right around his first birthday that I was quite sad, but I would say for the most part, as we watch him grow, it's more like, oh, I wonder if Zachary, you know, like that's kind of how our thinking is. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say I'm necessarily sad. I'm more curious about him. Like, would he have looked like him, or would he, you know, so, you know, it doesn't really make me sad. I miss that we didn't get that with him, but, you know, I think it's more a curiosity. We have a nephew who was born 5 days before we lost Zachary. So our nephew was born December 20th. And then Zachary was stillborn December 25th. And so watching our nephew is a real sign of Zachary, right? Because they're basically almost the exact same age. And so I love watching him grow up because I can try and picture what Zachary would be doing. But Teddy's kind of just even brought that even more sort of in our home and more personal. So again, it's not necessarily coming out of sadness, more out of curiosity and, you know, oh, I wonder how it would have been.
Yeah. And so with your nephew, has it always felt like that, like interesting and just endearing to watch, or was it sad initially to sort of see him right away?
No, you know what? He definitely never, I was never sad about him. Never. You know, I was sad that, you know, there was excitement around having two cousins being born so close in age. So I was sad for that. I was sad that, you know, that wasn't going to happen, that our nephew and our little guy weren't going to grow up together. I loved holding him in the beginning. I, you know, because again, here was a baby. And for me, I really needed that tangible. And so getting the opportunity to hold him really, really did help me. You know, again, I think it's just all babies are blessings. And that's truly how I feel. You know, I wish that Zachary were here, and I wish that, you know, Zachary and his cousin were able to play together. But again, I think watching our nephew grow up has been sort of a blessing for us to keep us kind of reminded of what things could have been like.
Wow, that's really interesting. That's like, that was a really hard piece for me. So it's nice when to hear that that's not the experience for everybody. And I guess another important reason for people to ask what's helpful as opposed to just assuming. Mm-hmm. So what are some ways that you continue to celebrate Zachary? Like, how do you keep his memory alive as in him a part of your family with your living children, with your husband?
So we visit the cemetery. Even Zoe will say to us, oh, we haven't seen Zachary. Let's go visit him. So, you know, we take him flowers, done picnics at his grave. So we do visit the cemetery. You know, I recently had one of those wall Scrabble pieces put together of all our family's names. And when I consulted the person making it, I sort of gave her a rundown of our family. And I said, what do you think? Should we include Zachary? And she was like, of course you should include him. Why wouldn't you? And I thought, yeah, you're right. Why wouldn't I? Why as his mom am I questioning that? But anyway, I struggle sometimes with what's right. And, you know, and it's like, no, he's our family. So anyway, we assembled this Scrabble wall piece, and his name, the way it worked out with spelling out all the names, his name actually connects all of our names. And my brother actually commented saying, oh, look at that. Zachary's the one holding you guys all together. And I thought, wow, yeah, that's powerful.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's up on our wall. We have a bear that we got from Molly Bears. I don't know if you're familiar with Molly Bears. So they make weighted stuffed bears. So the bear is the weight of your baby when your baby passed. And so we have a bear that weighs 1 pound, 6 ounces. And, you know, that this bear sits on our mantle. But, you know, when we go for family pictures, we bring the bear with us. The bear went with us to visit Santa. So, you know, so that's another thing that we do is bring our Zachary bear. And we talk about him. And, you know, our daughter, again, she's 7 and a half now. She's always very aware in including him. You know, she'll draw pictures of us as a family and she always includes him. So he's very much still in our family.
That's great. So where do you, when your kids ask about where he is, what do you say to them? Like, what is the response? What's the conversation around where he went?
We say that he's in heaven. We're not an overly religious family. You know, we've been to church and our daughter's baptized. Our Teddy isn't because of COVID, but you know, but we say that Zachary's in heaven. And that was something that, you know, right from the beginning with trying to explain to Zoe what had happened, because, you know, she was 3 and a half. So she was old enough to know mommy was pregnant and a baby was coming home, you know, so we had to tell her pretty soon after that there wasn't a baby coming home. And so of course she wanted to know, where did he go? And that prompted a lot of questions of, well, can we go there? Can we go visit? Can we go play? And, you know, so having some discussions around that with her. But no, we say that he's in heaven and that we talk about grandparents that have passed on or a couple aunts or uncles that have passed away and that Zachary is with them.
Okay. And has your faith been affected by your struggle with Zachary or with anything else? And have you leaned on it or have you retreated a little bit or not at all?
I don't know how affected I would say, except that, you know, I get frustrated with the whole concept of, you know, God has a plan. I would, you know, sort of my retort to that would be, you know, well, I don't approve of his plan. I don't know why this is his plan. His plan sucks. And so I struggle with the, you know, sort of everything happens for a reason. I don't buy into that philosophy. You know, I don't think there's a good reason that Zachary had to die and that he's not with us. I don't believe in that. But, you know, have I been angry at God? I think so, for sure. I've wondered, you know, what did I do in a previous life? You know, we've had some pretty significant tragedies happen over the years. And Zachary's sort of the top of the pile there. But so I kind of wonder, like, you know, did I really mess up previously that this is like payback? So I've struggled with that. But again, I mean, you know, we're not particularly religious or actively religious, I should say. So never really had that sort of fight with, you know, my inner beliefs.
Okay, fair enough. So were there any resources, books, websites, podcasts, anything that you found helpful that you would, you know, let's say someone else was going through something that you might gift to them or offer them?
Yeah, there's a book and I'm going to say the title slowly because it's complicated. It's An Exact Replica of a Figment of My Imagination. And
Rachel mentioned the exact same book.
Oh, did she? Okay. Yeah. And I found that book was quite good. It's, you know, it's funny, which if you can believe that a book about baby loss could be funny, it is funny. And I'm one that I tend to try and seek humor. I can be very sarcastic too. So it fit in right in with some of my thinking. And then after getting pregnant in our subsequent pregnancy, there's a book called Expecting Sunshine. And I found that really helpful as well. And it kind of delves into the whole, like, yes, you're pregnant again, but you're not really excited. So sort of that expecting sunshine, like everything's a ray of sun, right? Mm-hmm. And that some of the sort of struggles and challenges with that.
That's great. Okay. So I think that's kind of all I had wanted to really delve into, but is there anything you want to leave us with or say anything to anybody before we go?
I think just, you know, my heart breaks for anybody who's struggling through this. It's not easy. You know, my heart breaks for families that have to go through it. For the friends and families that are supporting them. I think just do what you can to try and remember their babies. I think that's the biggest thing, is everybody wants to know that, or wants to feel like their baby's going to be remembered, and that there may be times that are more difficult than others that we can't predict as we're going through it either. And so, you know, some don't be afraid to approach topics, but I think also really just let the person guide it. And I think this is one of those situations where, you know, probably just being that listening ear is the best way of supporting a person.
That's great. Thank you so much, Monica. This was really awesome.
Thank you.